From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Young children bond over monkey bars and sleepovers. By high school, friends help each other through tough classes and teenage love. 20-somethings turn to friends for advice on jobs and dating. But then, for many, comes marriage, family, career, and friendships can start to fall off, thin out. It's better if they don't. But how to do that? This hour, On Point, friendship over time. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you seen changes in your friendships over time? What's the key to keeping them? How do they matter over years? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Julie Beck, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic. Her recent piece is headlined, How Friendships Change in Adulthood. She saw them slipping away and went out to learn how these dynamics work over years and years, decades even. You can link to her article at our website, onpointradio.org. Julie Beck, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You're 25 years old. You've written wonderfully about this, but you seem kind of young to be worried about lifelong friendships breaking up. What got you on the theme, Julie?
Oh, good. I'm glad we're starting with my youth. Yeah, so I think I just definitely wanted to kind of be prepared, I guess. I don't know. I always want to plan for these things. And so I was interested to see if people had really studied friendship, because it does seem that, you know, family relationships and marriages are the ones that kind of get the most attention in the scientific literature. And in fact, it is like a pretty limited number of people who are studying this. But yeah, I was kind of sad to find out that most of the things I was worried about are in fact true. You know, the spreading out of your friendship network as you get older, you know, geographically, kind of thinning it out. You don't really have that sort of dense interconnected network where everybody knows each other that you might have in college or in high school. You have more responsibilities. It's just more difficult to stay in touch.
You describe going to weddings in your mid-20s, and, you know, they're happy occasions, but sitting there a little bit sad, wondering if each one could be the last time you would see certain sets of friends.
Yeah, I went to a wedding recently this summer, and it was great. It was kind of like a college reunion for us, I would say, just a lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time, and it was so great to see them. You know, the sort of people where you're like, oh, yeah, if we, like, lived in the same city, like, we would probably see each other and be friends. But, yeah, just kind of the realization that, like, well, this might be the last time I see this person or that person.
What's your dream? If you could have things your way after, I mean, you've done research. We're going to look at it. You've looked at people who have done a lot of thinking about this. But if in your life, you're 25 now, you could orchestrate your lifetime of friendships, what would that look like?
I think that's kind of hard to say, just because the constraints are real. And so I think it's not a realistic thing to be like, I'm going to keep all of my friends that I have right now forever.
What I asked, Julie.
I think you do have to prioritize. I think there's a few people that I definitely want, you know, to make the effort to stay in touch with throughout our lives. And I think it's just, my dream would probably just be to be deliberate and to make sure that I think about these things as I'm going about my life, and not necessarily always let things happen. You know, sometimes I think you have to fight for your friendships as well as your other relationships.
I want to bring in one of the people whose work you've paid a lot of attention to in your terrific article in The Atlantic. William Bill Rawlins joins us from Athens, Ohio. He's professor of communication studies at Ohio University, focuses on interpersonal communication, author of Friendship Matters and the Compass of Friendship. William Rawlins, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, your research is very compelling to Julie Beck. She's 25 and she's worried about how all this goes, and you're the first place that she turns to. What do you find are the different styles of management of friendship over lifetime? How people, different categories of people and friendships, how they make them, how they keep them?
Well, first of all, friendship is so contingent, Tom, that a lot of it, it's a matter of both exercising your will to try to manage your time and make time for friends and the social circumstances you're in. But in terms of styles, you could describe people as independents, folks that wherever they are, they make friends. They move to another place. They make more friends, and they're good at this, and they enjoy this. You could talk about folks who are discerning. This might be the kind of classic image of the lifelong friendship. People in that style will devote a lot of attention to particular persons, and the problem, it's not a problem, but one of the aspects of a discerning friendship is that person's been with you across your life. When you lose them in later life, it's a really, really, really sad gap in one's being. The acquisitive friends and people who practice and go about friendship in that way will make friends when they move from place to place, and Americans tend to move like between 5 and 7 times in their life. They will try to stay in touch, try to stay close with people that matter to them as they move, and they will make new friends. So those are 3 broad categories.
Julie, when you look out at your friends already today, at the people in your social group, do you see those categories, the independents who have maybe more friendly acquaintances than deep friendships, or that what Bill calls the discerning, who just have a few but very, very deep relationships, or this acquisitive people who keep picking up friends and maybe letting them go too, but they've got like turnover and a lot of activity there in ongoing friend making. Do you see that playing out already, Julie?
I think perhaps a little bit. I mean, Bill can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's still our networks have not dissolved so much that it becomes super obvious, you know, who's going to have what style across their life. I think you do see some people who have, you know, very deep friendships with their best friends from college or from high school or whatever, and they really prioritize those. And you see people who move around a lot and kind of acquire friends as they go. But I don't think that they're necessarily as pared down as they might be in say 10 or 20 years to really tell who's going to take what style.
Bill, how much does it matter in terms of quality of life, mental health, resilience for people to keep friends over time?
I think friends are crucial to the well-lived life, Tom. I've spoken to people of all ages, but speaking to people in later life, it's intriguing to me. They use almost the exact same words that Aristotle used 25 centuries ago. He said friendship is essential to the well-lived life. And I've spoken with people and they will say, my life would not have been worth living except for my friends. Friends are vitally important. The thing I want to mention that I think is so important, Tom, is that friendship is a freestanding relationship. But part of the beauty, and actually, and we could talk about in other ways, one of the kind of very contingent aspects of friendship, but friendship is also can be a dimension of other relationships. So across life, you can also make friends with your children. You can make friends with your brothers and sisters, with your parents, with the people you work with. But that introduces other, you know, variables and contingencies into the relationship.
Explain that. What do you mean making friends with your children or siblings as opposed to, you know, being in a parent-child relationship or being in a sibling relationship?
I appreciate that question. See, I think when you characterize friendship, you have to acknowledge that it's a voluntary relationship. You know, people choose to live in friendship with each other and to treat each other as friends. And that's part of the reason why, as a communication scholar, I've been so intrigued by it, because how do people treat each other? And they negotiate what are the standards they're going to live up to in that friendship. But it's voluntary. It's also personal. We care about someone because of who they are, not because they're, you know, what they can do for us or because they're a member of some category, but for that person. It also involves affection. So, you know, we like our friends a lot, and if we're honest with ourselves, many of our friends we love. There's 2 other attributes, Tom. It's a mutual relationship. You know, friends care about each other. If you care about someone as a friend and they don't seem to care about you and don't respond to you in the ways that you care about them, that's kind of a would-be friendship. That may not be something we'd really call a friendship. And then lastly, friends are treat each other as equals. And this, I think, is a really fascinating aspect too, because that doesn't mean you can't be friends who are like in different parts of your life. Now, What we do is we stand together as equals with regard to something that we really care about, okay? Mm-hmm. So what I would say is when you say, how can you be friends with brothers and sisters, with parents? And I would also argue it's very important in marriage to in any kind of partnering relationship because of the very things I've talked about. You choose to care about each other. I mean, one of the really rich moments in our life, my bride Sandy and I, is having our children kind of reach to us because they want to, not because they have to, see? They choose and to treat each other as equals. To have that affection be for the person themselves. These are all and the mutuality of it. So when you think about it, I mean, Tom, people dignify friendship relationships using Ken terminology. You would say, hey, this is not only my brother, it's one of my best friends.
Hold the thought there. We'll come right back to it. I'm so glad you're with us from Ohio University. Julie Beck at The Atlantic, who wrote the terrific piece, How Friendships Change in Adulthood, got us thinking about their evolution over time. Here's Mavis Staples' dad, Pop Staples, his song Friendship. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
If you're on the street, I'll take you in. If you're hungry, I'll give you food. If it's money you need, I got some say. If you're sick, I'll visit you. I've been where you are right now. You saw me through it all. I lean on you, now you lean on me. And I bet I won't let you fall. Cause we got friendship. Oh, Lord, it kind of lasts a lot.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about friends and friendship over time, how friendships change and come and go and last in the course of a lifetime. Julie Beck is with us. She's 25 years old, and she's got a piece in a recent issue of The Atlantic, headline, How Friendships Change in Adulthood. She felt them changing under her as she moved away from those school and college years, and people started to spread out across the country, spread out in many ways. Joins us today from Washington. William Bill Rawlins is with us from Athens, Ohio, at Ohio University. He's a professor of communications there, has spent years studying how friendships actually work over time, author of The Compass of Friendship, Friendship Matters. He's with us as well. You can join us. What do you think? What makes a friendship last over years, over decades? Have you had life changes and lost friends? What did it mean? Have you held on to friends, one or two or five, for a lifetime? What does that mean? What has it meant to you? Or do you just keep making new friends? How do you do that? What's it do for your life? Is it the same as long-term friendships? Julie Bill, stand by. Vanessa Jackson joins us as well right now from Atlanta, Georgia. She's a licensed clinical social worker there. Her practice is called Healing Circles, Inc. Vanessa Jackson, welcome back to On Point. We always love talking with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. I love being on with you. And this is a wonderful conversation.
You have thrown your mind back to when you were about Julie's age, and you had that same feeling of friends drifting off into marriage, into careers, into maybe other parts of the country. So I guess you relate to her sense of what's happening here and how should this work?
I totally agree with to understand and relate to that. And I remember being about 24 and realizing that my deep pool of friends that you had in college and were sort of had really shrunk into the who works with me and where I was going to make efforts to connect. Well, what I did, though, was my mother was a great model for me of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, what I learned very early on is basically men come and go, women friends are forever.
Okay.
Was some of the value. I probably need to modify that somewhat. But what I watched in my mother's relationships was her nurturing of friendships. In spite of having six children, a husband, working, and other things, I saw her really make efforts to nurture her friendships. And so that model came with me. But that jarring point that you talk about where you realize that you don't have this deep pool, it means you got to make some conscious efforts. So I think it's great to be 25 and thinking about this.
Julie, if I may, excuse me, I'm sorry, Vanessa, but Julie, what portion of your friends feel to you as though from college friends, and in college that can be a pretty big circle, What portion of that is beginning to drift in your mind?
It's hard for me to just pull a fraction out of the hat there. But the problem is that we kind of have spread out to, I would say, several different locuses. And this is kind of, people go to New York, D.C., Chicago, L.A., and then a few in between, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's I'm doing a decent job of keeping in touch with, a handful of people. And then otherwise it's just, when you're in town or when I'm in your city or every once in a while, if I see something that reminds me of you, I'll text you or something. You probably wanted a more percentage.
No,
answer,
I mean, when you say a handful, that already says a lot, because in college it can be many. And then suddenly you're to a handful. That's a big change.
Yeah, it is. But I also think, I think this is maybe what Bill would call like dormant friendships, where, you see what they're doing on Facebook. I know what's happening with them. If I go to Chicago, where a lot of them are, I will probably hang out with a lot of people who I'm not necessarily constantly in touch with, but we're always, happy to see each other when we have the opportunity. So there's a kind of a gray zone in between, we're always in touch, we're making a deliberate effort, and just totally lost touch.
Bill Rollins, what's the richest setting for friendship making in life? Is it childhood? Is it college? Is it when people in their 20s and working together? Where do the most seem to emerge from and last out of?
Well, I appreciate that question. We have images, of the childhood friendship and adolescent friendship. They're very, very important. And the short answer, Tom, would be it depends on the individual, because friendship is very individual and negotiated. But what I've seen in terms of looking at taking a life course perspective, and again, this is basically a middle class perspective because of the samples I had available at the time.
Okay.
And I want to be clear about that. But I think people, if they get the privilege of attending college and are blessed with the opportunity to attend college, it is a really important time to develop friends. And, you have this group of peers and they've got hope for the future and they share this excitement about learning and their choices they're going to make. And people help each other make those choices. Maybe this could be my life partner. Maybe this could be work I could commit myself to, or a type of, recreation. We try out a lot of those and commit ourselves to them during young adulthood. But the kind of irony of it, Tom, is you start young adulthood with this, excitement and group of people that help you make these choices. And then across the course of emerging into adulthood, you've made these choices and it kind of makes it so you have less time for the very friends that helped you make those choices. And so I always talk about friendship as involving tensions, Tom, and I think it's important that people realize that, because it's a benevolent relationship and it has very benign connotations. You have to mark that word to make it negative, former friend, fair weather friend.
Mm-hmm.
But friend itself is a very benign word. But what I want to stress and have tried to get people to understand is that friends are as responsible for some of your most painful moments in life as well as some of your just most thankful and joyful moments.
Like what, Bill?
Well, Mercy, at different points in adolescence, we idealize our friends and we expect that they'll come through us and come through for us, and then they don't. And it's very, very crushing. And that can happen across life course. We talked about how, friends can be dimensions of other relationships. You make friends at work, and then those friends, for one reason or another, turn their back on you at a moment when you really thought you could count on them. It's very, very painful. At the same time, you could have a professional problem or you could have a family problem and your friends come through for you. And that's just one of the richest and just a great reason to be grateful for these people that we live in friendship with.
Vanessa Jackson, help us maybe through, if your mom was your model, what did you learn from her? People today say, well, I'm too busy, or I've moved too far. My job's so demanding. And friendships start to fall, to slide down maybe the ladder of priorities. What can we learn from your mom on that front?
Well, Tom, I have to say, I probably take a harsh view on this one, because I think that excuse making, I think it's excuse making on some level. Because my mother had six children. mm-hmm. a year apart.
Okay. So she was busy, the definition
and didn't
of busy.
Drive yep. and worked. So, and again, I'm not trying to put it down. I totally identify with the fact that distance and I come from a working class family. So the college part, the greatest base of my friendships was not college. I did make a lot of friends. And one of my really good friends I met in graduate school, and she was probably the first person I literally walked up to because I was overwhelmed and said to her, "Will you be my friend?" Which was a big step. I think a lot of times, you know, in some ways, the issue of a fear of disappointment and is that we sometimes, let me give you an example. It's really storming in Atlanta today.
Okay.
And I left my keys about 90 miles away, my only set of car keys.
What?
And yeah, it's okay. interesting. And so it's 9 o'clock at night. I know it's going to be awful tomorrow. And I was like, how do I get there? It occurred to me, you're doing a radio show on friendship. How about calling some of them?
And it can really somebody give me a lift?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In the rain, on a Monday, work around my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a moment of like, who can I count on? But I thought, why don't you give them a chance? That there was a sense of everybody's busy. And I think that we are being considerate of our friends about the complexities of their lives. But I think sometimes we don't ask for people to be involved in our lives because we're afraid of imposing and afraid of, quite frankly, I think, disappointment. That if we ask and they don't come through. Now, what it turned out was two friends. One dropped me off. Thank you, Perry. And Deborah's going to pick me up. And these are busy people. But part of it was the sense about the give and take. And what the friend that dropped me off said is, thank you for letting me give back in the friendship. And she goes, when people don't let you give back, it starts like a bit of a parasitic connection. So I think the care and feeding of relationships so that it's very mutual.
And we're thinking about friendship over time here today, Vanessa. What about when people don't care and feed their friendships over time? You sit down with people when they're in times of trouble very often as a clinical social worker. How do you see friendship supporting or the thinning out of friendship, leaving people vulnerable over time?
I think it leaves them incredibly vulnerable. I put a note to myself. I think 50% of my clients' problems could be resolved or greatly diminished if they had a strong friendship network. And I was deliberate about that. I really went through about that. It's huge. I think because there's a degree of therapy is lots of things. But one thing of it is it's a little bit of purchased friendship where people have to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And now there's complexities where people really need professional help, and I'm not trying to minimize that. But I think oftentimes when I look at how often people need to come in, I ask them, who's your support network? Who do you talk to? Who can you talk to and who will you talk to? Who can you call at 3 o'clock in the morning if you're having a really hard time? When you lose somebody, who can show up for you? And a lot of time I spend prompting people to reach out and make these connections. Part of my job as a therapist is to help you build a network so that you don't need me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Julie Beck, you're listening to all this. One of the things that seems to emerge in those stories is that, and from what Bill says, there are tensions here over time. It's not always easy. Maybe friendships are like any other relationship. You have to keep giving back into them and calling on them to keep them healthy, Julie.
Yeah, I really loved that thing Vanessa said about, you know, feeding the friendships and giving people, you know, the opportunity to give back to you. One of the other people that I interviewed for the story, you know, she did a study about sort of the rules of friendship and what people think the rules are, and kind of found that as people got older, they felt the need to be more polite with their friends. You know, like in high school, it's like, give me a ride to school in the morning. You know, you're always calling on them for things like that. And you don't feel like you can when you get older. Things can get more tentative, especially if it's a newer friend as opposed to someone you've known your whole life, I think. And you're like, oh, they're married, they've got kids, they've got things they need to do. I don't want to bother them with either, driving me to work or with my emotional problems or with whatever. There's a certain degree of politeness that can be, I think, stifling to intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring our callers in, if I may. First one from Atlanta, Georgia. Liz is calling. Hi, Liz. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just had a quick comment. We started out talking about how marriage is the end of or you know, the start of the slow decline in friendships. And it's not just in my experience because life sort of takes over, kids come, and that sort of thing. It's also dependent on who you marry. So when you get married, you marry someone else, and they might have a totally different philosophy on friendship or different needs.
Mm-hmm.
And as is in my case, I am an absolute extrovert, and friendships mean the world to me. However, I married sort of an introvert who has a very stressful job and needs to, on the weekends, kind of recharge his battery.
Hunker down, burrow in maybe, not go out with a lot of friends.
Yes.
So where does that leave you, Liz?
Well, exactly. So, I mean, my advice is, number one, it's something that you want to think about when you choose who you're going to marry. Luckily, I did marry my best friend, so that does help. But it is an issue that we face that ebbs and flows. And I guess I try to make the most of my friendships with my girlfriends. I'm sort of waiting for them to get to the point where they can have more one-on-one time with me, away from the spouses and the family and that sort of thing, because, anyways, that's just my situation, and that was my comment. And I think friendship is has brought a richness to my life that is irreplaceable.
Liz, we hear it, and I appreciate your call. Bill Rollins, what about these issues where you get different expectations of friendship within, let's say, a spousal relationship, within a marriage? And, of course, that's not where everybody bases their life, mm-hmm. but if you are based there, What about when the instincts are different, maybe even intention?
I think it's a great point, and I'm glad Liz brought it up. You know, in many ways, for people who marry, the unit of friendship in adulthood can become a couple, and that complicates friendship even further, as Liz was remarking upon. It's like now you have two people that need to get along with two other people. And then you go back to the notion of marriage itself. Are you friends with your spouse? I've done a lot of work on cross-gendered friendship, and I've talked about how marriage itself can be so enhanced by friendship becoming part of the marriage. So you choose to treat each other as friends in addition to romantic partners and people who love each other deeply. You love that person for who she is, in my case, who your spouse is, not because they're, you know, some people refer to their spouse, their husband or their wife as a role. Your friend is not a role. Your friend is, in my case, Sandy, okay? The kind of affection. Yes, there's romantic affection. There's the deep importance of that. But when you look at research, you know, there was a study done a few years ago, okay? 30 years of research on that distinguished troubled marriages from happy marriages. One was luck. They just happened to meet the right person. The other was that they were also friends, because friendship gets you through tougher times during a marriage relationship.
We're going to come back and look more deeply at friendship, well beyond marriage there as well, but well beyond over a lifetime. Friendship among men, friendship among women. Bill Rollins, please stand by in Athens, Ohio. Julie Beck in Washington at the Atlantic. Vanessa Jackson in Atlanta, Georgia, with Hank Williams Jr. and Ray Charles, two old cats like us. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hell, there ain't nothing new for two old cats like us. Tell the truth now. We've been down a whole lot of alleys. We shook a whole lot of cans. There ain't too much about prowling or howling that we don't understand. Had a few doors slammed on our tails. We've been kicked and cut. But everything's two old cats like us. But everything's cool. Two old cats like us.
Let's go prowling.
All right.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about friends and friendship over time, how friendships change and come and go and last in the course of a lifetime. Julie Beck is with us. She's 25 years old, and she's been thinking about it as she sees a transition from those college days or school days when it's easy to have a lot of friends around to a life that gets a little more complicated, maybe a little busier. She's written about it in The Atlantic, How Friendships Change in Adulthood. You can link to that piece, and it's a good one. Bill Rollins, you'll find him all over it. He's at the Ohio University, has thought about friendship for years in his capacity there. Author of Friendship Matters and more. Vanessa Jackson is with us from Atlanta, Georgia. Licensed clinical social worker at Healing Circles, Inc. She talks with a lot of people at all stages in life, and you hear her telling us friendships matter right across that long span of life. And she's saying maybe we just get lazy in not investing in those relationships. People responding online. John says, my friends are the family I've chosen for myself. They mean more to me than anything else in my life, but things do spread out. Elizabeth writes, the spark stays the same, but there's much less contact. And I want to talk about exactly how that works and what is the relative importance of family, friends. Maybe friends are the chosen family. Steve in Mandeville, Louisiana. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think this is an incredibly important topic you're covering here. I have a phrase that I've coined, and it's blood is thicker than water, but friendship is thicker than both.
Oh,
and
that's a good one.
I have two brothers that I probably wouldn't be friends with if we weren't brothers, but we are friends. But I have about six friends from high school and college and one from after that are way more important to me than family.
You're 61, so you've kept it up, Steve. How have you done that?
Yeah. Well, just by staying in contact. It's funny, I just ran into one that I hadn't talked to in 20 years, and he's in Seattle. I'm in Mandeville, Louisiana, around New Orleans. And he and I started talking. We found each other on the internet, and we started talking, and it was about 10 minutes of catching up, and from there on, it was like an hour and a half on the phone of, like, mm-hmm. We'd been talking last week.
Explain that, Steve. You haven't talked to him in 20 years, and yet you're counting him among this half dozen friends who are more important than your own brothers. How does that work, Steve?
Because we just kind of lost contact in moving around and like you're talking about life and, you know, all the different things that happen in life. And we found each other again, and the friendship is just, bam, right there again, close. You know, we're both into music. I'm into it professionally. He's into it as a listener. We just started talking about different. I've probably bought 10 albums that he's told me to buy. Since, you know, it's amazing, and he's connected with like three other of this group that went to college together.
What's it do for your mental health, Steve? For the quality of your life to have that circle of friends so close?
It's close to as important as my wife, and my wife is a part of that. She went to college with all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most important thing to keep, you know, it's more important than anything I can buy, you know, to go out and buy myself a new boat or whatever. This is way more important. That's why I say it's more important than your family. I love the guy that just said it's the family he chooses.
Blood is thicker than water and friendship thicker than both. Steve, I love that. And let me hold it, if I may, for just a moment here. I'll take it to our great gang here. First, Kathy in Suffolk, Virginia. Steve in Mandeville, thank you. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to address the kind of like the guy that you just spoke with that about the lifetime. I'm originally from California, born and raised there. I went to college, but many of my friends didn't. But I'm still I have two really good friends, one that I grew up with one block from me. Her husband was in the Navy, as mine is, and now she moved to Virginia. I was still in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
She's now back in San Diego. You asked about what is the difference at one point about friendship through the lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of the things that was different with Jackie and I then than it is now, for instance, when we were kids, we'd wander down the street and we would be seen all the time. It was Jackie and I. And we were with each other almost every day. And my other girlfriend, Beth, is also the same. She now lives in Seattle. As we get older, Jackie and Beth and I, but I reached out to both of them. They aren't as close. I kept contact with them. When we'd have children, we would send cars and things, but we might not see each other because of the distance, 3,000 miles, working, children, money required to move back and forth across the country. But now we still can reach out, and we don't see each other every day. And when we were younger, we thought the best friend was the one you saw every day. You were always with them. Now the best friend is the one that you know has some secrets that you may or may not want to get out. But you also can reach out and call them, and it takes work. It does. It takes a lot of work. Text messages, happy birthday. Facebook has helped. But that's just kind of my cut on it, is that it does take work, but it's definitely worth it. And I loved Vanessa's comment from her mother, because my mother said that almost to a T. Divorced mother, single mother, and so she had a better option for it. Men will come and go, but friends will stay with you forever.
Kathy, I appreciate your call so much too. Vanessa Jackson, there are people willing to put the work in, and they're keeping those relationships over a great, great spans of time, and find them maybe the most important things practically in their lives.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, the other thing too, and again, I love the fact that Julie is raising this issue at this point in her life, and helping other people to think about it, because it does take effort. So when I wanted to sort of back a little bit off of the lazy part, because I think it takes a lot of effort, but when your children go off, get grown, your parents die, your partner, I mean, it's like, I remember my mother died, and one of my very best friends who I met when she was freshman in college, I was working at the university. And so we had retained that friendship across great distance for many, many years. And 2 weeks after my mother died, she moved across the street from me for 1 year. And I remember when her car pulled up in the driveway, my memory is being in the middle of the street and just clinging to her like, it's going to be okay. Because those moments when people hold our stories, someone says they know all of our secrets, but those are the intimacies. I think Julie used that term earlier, the intimacies that they had exchanged in friendship, that I love them. I don't have to see them all the time, but that love is there. And so and it's also about friendships being somewhat forgiving and accepting and honoring of when people need to pull back for children, pull back for parent, pull back for their relationship, how to honor that as part of the friendship. One of the things that one of my really good friends did when she got pregnant, and I saw her, you know, she's getting very focused on being a mother, and I thought, oh, I don't know where this is going to go for us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that happened is that she invited me to be the godmother. Now, we would have been fine anyway, but the part that she gave me a role in this family did something too. It was like I can be a part of this phase of her life because I don't have children. And so, and I think it's also really important as a friend to really be respectful. I don't want my friends to get a defects complaint, so I need them to be present for their children. So I have to be flexible about where they need to and maybe start to get involved in more family things than we would have as single childless people. So I think it's really a lot of flexibility, but at the heart of it is my intimate, loving connection with my friends and being able to be flexible, and also intergenerational friendships. I have my oldest friend is probably in her 90s, and I probably need more 20-year-old friends. And some of those friendships have emerged from professional relationships. We have a group that gets together every summer that's a professional connection, that they are friends of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I have another group from when I was involved with the Black Women's Health Project, and we get together every year. These are really, really busy people, and we have prioritized it.
Yeah. Julie Beck, you make a point of reminding us that the busyness that can get in the way of friendship doesn't last forever. And when kids go off later in life and maybe careers begin to wind down or at least get more manageable, then friendships can surge in importance again, you found talking with people about friendship, Julie.
Yeah, when you get older, you know, after retirement or after your kids are grown up, if you have kids, or, you know, things just kind of wind down a little bit in older adulthood, it seems like. And so then there is time for friends again. Where that becomes kind of sticky, I guess, is, you know, what you did before then really kind of shapes who you have left, right? You know, and it's not to say you can't reconnect with people, because especially, you know, with the internet and such, you can. But, you know, maybe your making friends skills have atrophied somewhat from your years of busyness. Maybe, you know, you missed out on a lot of time with your closest friends, and you can reconnect with them, but it just could be more difficult.
Let's go to Vincent in Atlanta, Georgia. Vincent, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So basically, I am getting married in 3 weeks, and my main group of friends are from college. Now, I'm a veteran, and so I went to college a little bit later on in life.
Okay.
I was 24, 25 when I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
All my friends now, I'm 33, all my friends now are currently 25, 26, just graduated from college, still out there, still partying hard. And I've noticed a rift between us because I'm not doing that anymore. My fiance is 29, and we like, you know, staying in the house. We don't like going out, you know, till 2 a.m. in the morning and doing all that.
Sure.
Doing all those things. And so I'm kind of trying to figure out how I can handle that because I've noticed a little bit of resentment from one friend in particular towards my new life, so to speak.
Bill Rollins, speak to young Vincent there. He's shifting gears. His friends are not. What's the advice, sir?
Well, Vincent, congratulations to you. I hope you found a life partner that you enjoy. Hey, your friends will come around. They'll come around. But I think it takes time and truth to make good friends, and it sounds like you've spent some good time with these guys. And I think, you know, I would speak with this guy and say, hey, look, you know, I'm marrying the love of my life. It's going to change things for a while, but let's see this through. You know, you're my buddy. Let's talk. Let's do what it takes to stay friends. I would talk with him.
Bill Rollins talks about three expectations of a close friend. Julie reports these: someone to talk to, someone to depend on, someone to enjoy. Of course, that can happen in all kinds of social relations. Jen in Brookline, Massachusetts. Jen, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You know, many of the studies referred to reflect a traditional heteronormative life cycle, and I'd just like to point out that the gay and lesbian community has a long tradition of very strong friendships, including intergenerationally,
absolutely,
especially as people face rejection from their families, that friends are the family that we choose, and we might be a model for everyone else.
And some of that rejection has been at the heart of that, Jen, so you build your intimacies where you find them.
Correct.
What can we learn from that, Jen? Give us more insight there.
Well, I think before gay marriage became the law of the land, there were many efforts from within the LGBT community to value and privilege all different kinds of intimate relationships. And we've seen that go by the wayside now. But now this conversation is one example of the way we're finally coming back around to recognizing that so many different kinds of our relationships must be cherished for a healthy whole life, not just our one primary partner relationship.
Absolutely.
Jen, I'm so glad you called. Vanessa, I mean, this points out something interesting here, that friendship is this beautiful quality of not being confined by anybody's social norms. If it's a real friendship, can go where it will.
And I hear Bill talking in here, too. Thank you, Jen, for calling, because to me, it's like one thing I was thinking about last night was queering our friendships, because some of my best models for friends are my queer friends who able to negotiate moving out of partnerships, long-term friendships, I think there's so much to learn from the LGBT community about friendships and found family and intentional lifelong connections. And so I call that queering friendship. But, you know, and
reversing,
I think that,
the old meaning of taking but enriching, actually.
Yeah, it's totally rude. I think there's so much to learn for the very reasons that Jen mentioned. And it's just being able to look at beyond. I think friendships help primary relationships in really important ways. I don't think my partner wants me full strength. And when I say full strength, like all of my needs met by him.
Mm-hmm.
That is not fair. And so my friends are places where I can meet needs that I don't then have to expect him to meet for me, because they're met in these other beautiful ways, and they're family of the heart. And so I just think that they're just profoundly important. And like I said, in my clinical practice, I'm really sort of drive this home about people's need to build healthier relationships, which means investing time. Sometimes in Atlanta, we have this big driving outside the perimeter thing. It's, you know, inside, outside. And sometimes it's a 45-minute drive, but you've got to figure out these are lifelong connections. And as you age And people begin to die off. That's the other thing, that watching my mother's friendship, watching that now even my own friendship network, because I'm 55, I need to be able to have people, to be resilient and resourceful and have pillows of support when things happen in my life. And if I invest in these friendships now, they're going to be there to serve me when I'm 80 and 90 also. So there's a very practical aspect of it.
Julie Beck, you've got Bill Rawlins reminding you in your piece that long-time, long-term friends help keep the past alive and they help keep the present vibrant, Julie.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just, like I said before, kind of being deliberate with the effort that you make, and it will hopefully pay off later in life.
Julie Beck, it's pretty great to have a 25-year-old remind people across all ages of why long-term friendship matters, and we're really glad you went out and did the work to do it and brought it to us. Thank you so much for that, Julie.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. Great to talk to you.
Julie Beck, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic, with us from Washington. Bill Rawlins at Ohio University, keep at it, sir, and thanks for your insights today.
I appreciate the chance to talk with you, Tom.
And Vanessa Jackson at Healing Circles in Atlanta, Georgia. Vanessa, it's always wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much.
We'll go out, young Rihanna with Umbrella from Good Girl Gone Bad. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Stand under my